Hi everyone, welcome back to Truth Bombs and Tea. I'm Tina, as you know, and this is part two of a small video series about self-awareness. So if you haven't listened to or watched part one, I will leave a link below for you to check that out. So part one was really breaking down what self-awareness really is, and most people don't really know. Even myself, who has been doing personal development work for many, many years, needed a bit of a refresher. So it's a good one. So check it out. But today is part two, and we're focused on, now that we know what it is, why it's so important in our lives, how do we start to develop it? Because it is a skill, and I'm going to be sharing 8 tools or exercises with you that will help you to develop greater self-awareness to help your life and your relationships, the one you have with yourself, and to have healthy relationships with other people. Okay, so here's what we're covering, the 8 tools and also 4 mistakes that we can all fall into that block our self-awareness. And we don't want that, so I want to uncover those traps for you. So just briefly, self-awareness isn't just knowing and understanding ourselves internally. It is also understanding how others perceive us and our relationship to other people. So the first tool that's going to help us in our self-awareness journey is to clarify your values. Tools/exercise, you can say both. So when you know what's important to you, then you can start to align, be aware of yourself and align your actions to that. So if we look at this clarifying your values cycle, we identify our top 10 values, and then I like to break it down to 5. And if you need some help with that, on the homepage of my website, there is a video that walks you through 3 really powerful exercises in order to be happy. And one of those is a clarification of your values exercise. But basically, what you do is you think about the things that are truly important to you. So if it's family and friends, then connection could be a top value. If it is career, then learning or independence might be a top value. If you have passions for gardening and piano and you're multi-passionate, well, then creativity is probably a top value. So what you want to do is write 10 of them down, and then I like to, you know, then cull that list into 5. It just makes it a bit easier. And usually you find that they double up, a lot of those ones double up. So as I said, narrow to the core values, your top 5, and then look at how those values actually show up in your life. Because it's great to say that you've got these values, quote unquote, but if they're not showing up, then really what's the point of having them? Because you say one thing, but you do the other. And we all do that to some extent. But self-awareness is about really taking stock of, if these things are important, are we pursuing them? Are our actions aligning to our thoughts and values? Okay, so we do that little comparison just to check in and know what's going on. So tool number 2 is self-observation. And, you know, this is hard. It's kind of meta. We're zooming back and sort of witnessing what we're doing rather than, you know, being a really busy participant in everything and not really understanding ourselves. So you can set random alarms, okay? Obviously, maybe at work, you know, or at church or something like that, you may not want to do it. That's if anyone goes to church anymore. But if possible, set 3 or 4 alarms throughout the day. And then you're going to pause and observe. So you're going to look at your thoughts and notice them and look at the feelings that you've got and just make a note of them. It can be just very brief notes, like feeling good, no tension in the body, those kind of crib notes. Then you're going to log that down, of course, and then you're going to look at patterns. So maybe at the end of the week, I wouldn't do it daily, but at the end of the week, you can look back and think, wow, you know, I was really happy most of the time. Oh, there's a couple of repeating patterns, like I'm getting tense shoulders and I was feeling irritated and underappreciated. And you can have a look at those situations and determine maybe that happens, you know, semi-regularly at work. Maybe it's a particular person in your life that's triggering that. Because when you are aware, you can then make choices and respond rather than react. Number three, ask better questions. And so we're kind of used to asking, why do I feel sad? Like, why do I feel mad? Gosh, I sound like Dr. Seuss. Why do I feel bad? But rather than doing that, we get more information from the what questions. So why questions kind of make us dwell and navel gaze at ourselves, right? And it kind of is this abstract concept, why, you know, but when you ask what, it identifies specifically what the triggers are, and it can promote understanding that you can actually act upon. And why questions explore underlying causes, and we can rationalize and overthink, but what questions gets to the heart of things and pinpoints people or tasks or situations that are triggering or that cause a different emotion. So asking what questions, what specifically am I mad about right now? And if you say, why am I mad? I mean, that opens the doors to a lot of things. But if you say, what has caused me to be angry? And it could be, you know, that you were late for the bus. And then you were like mildly angry. And then on the bus, someone was really rude and loud and objectionable around you. So that increased your anger. Okay. So what questions are far more valuable when it comes to self-awareness than why questions, which can blow out to a whole heap of things. Okay. So let's start to use what questions rather than why. Tool number four is, this is a hard one. It's to gather external feedback. In other words, feedback from other people. And here's a caveat, a really big like foam finger, like a Coles foam finger pointing down. And that is, ask people for feedback who you trust and who you know really wants the best for you, okay? Not the frenemies, the fake friends, the co-workers that secretly is jealous of you, not the family member who is always so judgy and condescending. You need to talk to people who are interpersonal growth as well. They're living their best life and they want you to live your best life, okay? And when you do this, you have check-ins with them. So maybe like once a month you meet for coffee and you talk about your self-awareness journey. Like, I'm really trying to get to know myself better. Sometimes I get mad or, you know, I'm depressed or I'm overly excited and just want you to feed back to me, like how you think I'm going in terms of my relationship with you and other people. Do you see some things that you think I could work on? Maybe I'm not very resilient. I'm feeling like I'm not very resilient. What do you think? So it's just a check-in, okay? And then oftentimes because we're in our own skin, we don't see what's going on. And because our mind tells us a lot of things and a lot of it isn't true, we're not very accurate at different times, okay? Particularly if we're just developing our self-awareness and at that time it's quite low, right? So we need to trust the people around us to give us the feedback and help us to be clearer about patterns, okay? And you can see why this would be hard, right? Because you're becoming a little bit vulnerable and nobody likes to take criticism. And that's not what I'm talking about here. That's why you have to select the people that you're going to talk to very carefully and to be confident that they want what is best for you and they will do it in a loving and supportive way, okay? Tool number five is tracking your emotions, okay? So we've touched on it a little bit, but now we're starting to focus in on it with this particular tool. So the journey between being illiterate emotionally, or another way is to say low emotional intelligence, to being emotionally literate or having a high level of emotional intelligence has three kinds of steps, right? So you want to track your mood and energy every day. Okay, it doesn't have to be throughout the day, but maybe in the morning you're like, yeah, I've woken up pretty chipper. I feel pretty calm. Or it could be, you know, yikes, I feel quite constricted and tight in the chest because I have to present at work today, or I've got to have a difficult conversation with my son or daughter. So just track it, okay, every day. Then over that week, you will start to, and over that day, you will start to look at the emotions that are popping up. So maybe if you are worried about something, you might start feeling anxious. So you're tracking daily the emotions and how you're feeling. And then you're looking at the activities that are producing that. As I said, it could be a presentation at work, and that's why your anxiety levels are higher than normal. So you're tracking the emotion and the activity that is happening at that time or that you're thinking about that's producing that emotion. When you do that, over time, you'll see certain habits, certain patterns, and you can then make informed choices as to how to reframe those particular thoughts that produce those feelings. So it's a very simple but very powerful tool to use. Tool number six, examine your stories and beliefs. And just like getting the external feedback, this is a tricky one, because we really believe all our stories, okay, and our beliefs, hence the word belief. So it's a difficult one, but really important, because we all have our blind spots. We all have our narratives and stories that really we've built, we've honed, we've reread and read. To us, it's like a bestseller, right? We read it all the time. So we don't have that separation between what's possibly inaccurate and untrue and our story. So you previously have done the preceding tools, and those have helped you to start track patterns of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And so we're going to use that to identify, okay, if this is what I'm thinking and this is what I'm doing, what are the beliefs? What do I believe about myself or about other people that are causing these thoughts, feelings, and behaviors? Okay, so we identify that. We question where it comes from. Is this my lived experience based on fact and truth, or is this some sort of story I was handed by someone else, or a story that I made up that when I really look at it, doesn't have any factual basis? Like, can I prove these beliefs to be true? Are they 100% factual? If not, we've made something up or someone's handed it to us, okay? Then once we go, I don't think this is exactly correct, we can test it. We can start to test it by making new choices around those stories, writing those stories out and reframing them. And a beautiful, powerful exercise that you can do that I have done with people in the past is to go back to an incident that you felt emotionally overwhelmed, or I don't like to use the word, but that's the one that's popping into my head, traumatized by, and to go back and rewrite it as your more informed, wise self, and go back and give the advice to that you at that stage, that will really help. And to really look back with that wisdom of hindsight and say, you know, that incident that happened at work, it wasn't that the boss hated you. It was because of this, this, and this. So you go back as the more factual one, the one that can see the true picture, the one that can be supportive and understanding as to why that might have happened at that particular point, but who now knows better and can do better, right? So we rewrite the stories. Very, very powerful. Tool number 7, understand your behavioral patterns. So these, I hope you can see, have built up from sort of the more simpler ones, and we're putting the pieces of the puzzle together, okay? So we now know a lot about ourselves. We identify our stress responses, and we note down how do we react. So it could be that you fly off the handle and you really, you know, crack it, or, you know, basically throw an anger fit. Maybe you avoid and you shrink down and you, you know, just remove yourself. Maybe you have a chronic people-pleasing habit. I know for me, for a long time, I did. Even if I disagreed, I didn't want to rock the boat, okay, which many people who know me are surprised by. But I like to say that if I had a dollar for every time I had to bite my tongue and go against kind of my natural instincts, because it was vying with my nurturing instincts that I was brought up to, you know, have to do, I would be a billionaire, right? So I had the people-pleasing habit, not because that was naturally in me. I don't think it's really naturally in anyone to push down your own needs because you're taught that other people's needs come before yours, right? I don't think that's natural in anyone, but it can be taught to you, and it was taught to me. So write down your top three reactions. How do you react under stress and high emotion? Then notice some problem-solving approaches, okay? So if you know that you have an absolute anger fit when somebody says certain things, then it's really your responsibility to say, I'm going to do better, okay? Because it's not nice for you to throw an anger fit, and it's certainly not nice on the person who's receiving it. But, and we can do better than that, which is what self-awareness is all about. So you might think, okay, when I feel that tension in my chest, when I feel my face going red, I'm going to say to the person, I just need a 10-minute break and we can continue this conversation after that, okay? You might have something where you notice those physical signs and you pause, as I said, the conversation and reflect on it. You might then also know what triggers you and avoid those situations if possible. And if not, use some communication techniques like I just gave you as an example, okay? So we're going to recognize how we communicate. In anger, oftentimes it's not good. Usually you go for the jugular. Usually you get very personal and you actually attack the person instead of the problem. So if you can identify that, you can then say, I don't want to be attacking that person, particularly if you love that person. And even if you don't, you don't want to be attacking people. So you can maybe decide to use a technique like attacking the problem. So it's almost like you push the problem into the center between the two people and you continually kind of visualize it in the middle. And that's the thing that you want to attack or approach, not the person. So we're attacking the problem and approaching the person. They're two very different things. And I'll probably do a video on that. So we're recognizing the patterns, we're observing how we handle conflict, and then we're choosing those responses. Okay, so that's the cycle. And I've given you some examples there. So hopefully that's helped. Tool number 8, this is the last one, create accountability. And this sort of taps into getting that external feedback, okay? So if you are really dedicated to becoming more self-aware because you want a better, healthier relationship with yourself first and foremost and then with other people in your life, you can have an accountability partner, again, that person that you trust, that you know has your back, that you know is wanting to live the best of their life and they want you to as well. You can meet up with them. You can take it to different levels. So an accountability partner who's a friend, or an app or a journal. Journaling is fantastic. If you haven't checked out my Truth Bombs and Tea Life journal, that is, even if I do say so myself, a brilliant tool to help you know and grow yourself and your relationships with life and other people. So check that out. I will leave a link below. And then you can also join groups, okay, personal development groups. And if there are particular things that, you know, are causing a bit of dysfunction in your life, then you can certainly work with a coach or a therapist. So they're the 8 tools. And just to finish off, I want to point out the pitfalls or the traps that we can all fall into. And I have done this myself. Overanalyzing. I am an overthinker. That's born from high levels of anxiety that I have. I know myself to be a high functioning, highly productive, highly anxious person, right? People often marvel at what I can do in the time I'm given. And part of that is just, you know, that's my jam and I love it. But part of it is that I am driven by fear and anxiety, and which is why I have hyper vigilance and hyper organization. I've learnt throughout my personal development journey to moderate that and to bring balance to it, so I can use it rather than it using me, okay, like it used to in the past. Perfectionism, okay, so this isn't about being perfect, that you're analyzing yourself so that you are the best of the best of the best. No, it is so that you're the best version of you and that you are authentic. So it's about authenticity, not perfectionism. So don't fall into that trap. The third trap is ignoring the feedback. So you've got the person talking to you and saying, listen, Teen, I really love you. You've got these great strengths, but I have noticed that you tend to, you know, like to control things, or, you know, you have really gotten better with your, you know, perfectionism and your control, but you do tend to do X, Y, Z, right? These people love us. So hopefully we can let our guard down and receive the feedback that we're getting. So if you want to ignore it, that's fine, but you're not going to develop as a person, right? Because we don't know what we don't know. We all have blind spots. And we're all a work in progress. And self-awareness as self-judgment, right? So the more you know yourself, the more danger there is that you can say, oh my God, I've got so many hang-ups, right? So we don't want to move into the judgment space. What we want to do is move into the information and knowing space. That once we know ourselves, we can say, wow, okay, yeah, there were some patterns there that were holding me back, but go me that I've found them, and now that I know better, I'll do better. So it's about discovery, not judgment, okay? So to sum up, self-awareness is the true foundation of having healthy self-esteem and self-love and having healthy relationships with other people. It's a skill, so that's the good news, and it can be developed. like all skills, it takes time. You're not going to, you know, do one of the tools and all of a sudden become, you know, enlightened or, you know, turn into Gandhi, right? Just like going to the gym, anything worthwhile takes time. And so you just choose one tool to start with and use it until it becomes natural and simple, and then you move on to the next. And being self-aware increases your happiness and it decreases stress, and it also brings more confidence in within you, within the work that you do, within your relationships, and within the decision-making space. So you make more confident decisions. So between the two videos, the What is Self-Awareness Part 1, which I'll link below, and this particular tools video and exercises, I hope that this will really encourage you to become more self-aware, to see why it's so important and how much of a profound impact it can make on your life, and to know that you can choose a single tool and use it to benefit your life, and then choose another one in your journey. It's totally customizable and it's totally doable because they're very, very simple tools. So on that note, here's to self-awareness. And until next time, let's make the rest of our life the best of our life.